And welcome back to a brand new episode of MTG Eternities. I'm your host, Carl. So today I'm recording from El Paso. I just kind of got back from GP Vegas, and we're going to talk about here in a moment. But I also have a special guest with me, big friend of mine who's I've been known for years now. He kind of helped me become the player I am today, as well as we've been playtesting with each other. I'm going to go ahead and let him introduce himself. You may know him from another podcast, MTG Focus.
Hello, my name is Eric Sias. Yeah, Carl and I have known each other for, gosh, I don't know, like 8-9 years or something like that. Maybe even longer. I don't know. But yeah, so I used to podcast. I used to be on the MTG Focus podcast. I also hosted MTG Focus Spikes and the Mana Spike podcast before that. I did a short stint vlogging on YouTube, my Magic adventures for a while up until I quit playing. But now I'm back and I'm happy to be here.
How does it feel to be back? Kind of just getting back on the saddle or?
It's kind of cool because I stopped playing. I actually stopped playing like 2 years ago after an RPTQ that went south. So I was with one of my podcast co-hosts, Brandon. We both were qualified for this RPTQ that we traveled to Plano, Texas for. And it was, I want to say it was like Oath of the Gatewatch sealed. And we both lost our win-and-ins for top eight. And it was just so upsetting. And we both just kind of felt so disheartened by the game. We were just upset and said we needed to take a break. And that break turned out to be close to 2 years. In that time, I did play like a couple of PTQs or PPTQs here and there. Top eight of them, never won one. And just kind of played for fun. Mostly just like the PPTQs and just grinding wherever I could. But I definitely put a stop to like all the travels for Magic, stopped going to GP, stopped doing really anything and focusing on my career. And so I was growing that and having fun with it up until recently when one of my buddies here locally qualified for the team RPTQ, called me up and recruited me to be on his team. So I'm back in the game. Getting ready for this RPTQ.
We're glad to have you back. I know I'm excited. Now that you mention it, it's kind of weird, actually, because your return to Magic kind of coincides with Brandon's return to Magic. I met him in GP Vegas. We didn't get to hang out as much. We were both at different hotels and stuff like that, so things didn't necessarily coincide. And GP Vegas was its own horrific monster, if you were in the main event, at least. So I know you and I have talked about it, but what my experience from GP Vegas was just absolutely terrible, being in the main event. So day one didn't really do much because you're just kind of there doing side events and stuff like that, and that was Friday. You're either doing side events or you're selling stuff. So move on to the actual main event. I'm sorry, that was Thursday. So move on to the actual main event Friday. And the first round, you know, they are all delayed, like, what, 30 minutes is usually what you expect. And that's just because people go to time, people get time extensions. So there's no big problem with that. Round two happens, and then the extensions slowly increase from about 30 minutes to an hour. And this was partially because two players couldn't decide whose turn it was to start turns. That was literally a 30-minute argument they had before they called judge.
Really? 30 minutes?
30 minutes. I kid you not. There was a huge crowd standing around them. It was pretty bad. It was two decks that shouldn't have gone to time either. It was like Timur Control versus Abzan Tokens.
Wow.
Don't know how that happened. But they went to time. That was a 30-minute argument, and then they finally finished turns in a tie. Go figure. So they wasted everyone's time. Everyone was rather peeved by that. Moving on to the third round, which started roughly about 11:30. Technically did not end until 2:30 when they finally started the next round. The reason why that hesitation between rounds lasted so long was supposedly one of the printers caught fire from the actual tournament and their software went down. Long story short, they offered everyone immediately around 1:30 a refund if they wanted to. They also offered everyone a free tournament, which we're supposed to get in an email. I don't know how that necessarily is going to work, but I'm looking forward to a Channel Fireball email saying, hey, I got a free GP coming.
Yeah, you know, I'll say that for me, GP Vegas was great because I wasn't there. And I got to watch all the coverage. I got to play test for my RPTQ from my couch. And it was cool watching the coverage and seeing all the tweets happen on Twitter. And everybody just complaining about this logistical nightmare. Like, it was insane. Like, I have to admit, though, I was kind of sad that I didn't end up going. I should have probably planned it out better so that I could go and join you out there. Because I did miss out on seeing a whole bunch of friends that ended up going. One of whom, I don't mean to take over your show real quick, but one of whom I think is very popular in the community and is in dire straits right now. And that's Wedge from the Manosaurs.
Absolutely.
So Wedge had made the trip out to Vegas, and he's from upstate New York. Made the trip out to Vegas and couldn't even make it to the event because he had to undergo emergency surgery on his back. Yeah. And poor guy, I mean, he was going to meet a girl that he was seeing. And they had one date the night before, but he had to have surgery. And she has been a trooper the entire time and just like been by his side this whole time. And he doesn't have insurance, so his family started a GoFundMe for him, and I know I donated, and I know a bunch of people out there have already donated, yep. But I think the more that we can spread the word, the better, because he's such an integral part of the community. He's a friend of mine. I know that I introduced him to Carl, and Carl knows him too, so mm-hmm. Anything that we can do, anything that you guys out there listening can help with, would greatly be appreciated, and will definitely go a long way because he's stuck in Vegas during his recovery. So while everybody had their fun and has left, he's been in the hospital the whole time and he's still there recovering.
Yeah, I'm going to include a link to the GoFundMe page. I'm actually glad you brought that up because I was going to bring up Wedge and that whole situation. So I'm going to include a link in the GoFundMe page to the bottom of this on my YouTube channel and where I place the podcast. I'm going to include a link there. So if you do want to help out Wedge, be sure to click the link for the GoFundMe page. Please donate what you can. Every little bit helps. As Eric mentioned, he's a very integral part of the community. He's a pillar. You can even argue at this point he's the first magic YouTuber to kind of bring magic in the forefront. Of course, the professor's let it take over the popularity because he posts more frequently, but that doesn't make Wedge any less integral to the community.
No, absolutely. And yeah, Wedge definitely set the standard for what YouTubers who like magic YouTubers look like. And I know that whenever I got to meet him at GP San Antonio a while ago, we had a very long discussion and conversation about what that looks like, and then we've had other discussions behind the scenes. And had I continued down the path of being a MTG vlogger or YouTuber or whatever, I know that my success would have been solely on the back of the advice that he and the professor had both given me. So shout outs to Wedge and shout outs to everybody who's been donating to the GoFundMe. Again, just, you know, whatever you guys can donate, I know it would go a really long way to help them out.
Absolutely. I'm glad you brought that up. I didn't know what happened to Wedge initially. I know he was supposed to be there. I was so focused on the tournament that I really wasn't checking Twitter as much. I found out via some research into it because I was wondering, I saw the professor there like day one. I was like, huh, well, I wonder where Wedge is. He must be running late or something like that. I knew he was there in Vegas, I think, since Tuesday or Monday of that week, just because of the girl he was seeing, and he wanted to get an early setup. But that surprised me when he initially wasn't there, so that's when I dug into the Twitter feed, and after a while I saw what had happened, that's definitely when I got concerned about it.
Yeah, and even Wizards was able to put together a really nice video from a bunch of people from Wizards and various content creators to kind of spread the word about the GoFundMe on coverage. And it was nice to see, but I only saw that video once throughout the whole coverage. And I think that they should have been playing it, you know, at various points throughout the coverage.
Yeah.
So it's basically on us to get the word out there.
Absolutely.
So aside from that, I saw that there was a lot of cool stuff happening in Vegas. I saw that there was a beta draft, and I know that we just came back from dinner and we were talking about it. It looked really, really cool. Ben Stark has nothing to complain about for the rest of the year, opening up an Underground Sea and a Mox Emerald. So way to go, Ben Stark. I didn't even get to see the culmination of the draft, like the actual play. I just saw the draft itself because by the time it finished, it was already like 10 o'clock on Sunday.
Yeah.
And I had to get ready for work the next day, so I didn't get a chance to watch any of the games.
I watched a little bit before I went back to the casino, and I admittedly do gamble. I kind of come from a gambling background. That's a different story for a different day, of course. So I caught like the most of the draft, and I caught like the very start of when they started to actually play before I kind of got tired and wandered back. It had been a long day for me. But I will agree, Ben Stark opened quite a bit of money. I do wish they kind of still played with gloves rather than like taking them off, like, what was it, almost halfway through or something like that. That kind of hurt my soul just a little bit, but I imagine, like, because Rudy was there as well, so I imagine it like hurt him just like seeing all them open up this stuff without like gloves on properly.
Well, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, this, they're their hearts to keep. Oh, so yeah. And they were going to play with them in the draft, most likely, or at least that's what the intention was. So I think that they felt like, well, you know, I'm not going to go and get these graded, so I might as well just use my fingers and play with them.
Yeah.
But it's not like they did detrimental damage to the cards. And to be quite frank, I don't know that anybody's going to get rid of those cards, because it was like, that's such a momentous occasion that they want to keep those cards for just for the sake of having them as like collector's items.
Mm-hmm.
I know I would.
I would too, but I would be halfway tempted to honestly sell maybe one or two of them, since I'm still am in college, and that would be that would be quite a bit of a dent off.
Yeah,
that's
definitely an issue.
Yeah, that and like beta cards are, even alpha cards are hard to move depending on what you have. So I guess what else happened in the tournament? So I ended up not going back a Saturday. I hung out with some family, had dinner, stuff like that, and ended up going back Sunday for the PPTQ. And that was, I think, 492 players, roughly. So it was a fairly sizable PPTQ for the modern PPTQ. What I played all weekend was Infect. For the main event, I went 2-0, and then the two-hour break happened and didn't get over till 2:30. I felt like I personally lost momentum. I was rather upset. I was making major play mistakes, and I just gave up, I think. I was defeated just by like how long the tournament is going and how upset I was getting. But going back to Sunday for the PPTQ, I personally did fairly well. I went 5-1 in that. Granted, you need to be 6-0 to actually get into the next bit of it, but I felt 5-1 with Infect was fairly decent.
Yeah. So, and to be clear, this is a PTQ, not a PPTQ.
Yeah.
So the winner of this event just gets an invite to the Pro Tour, right?
Yeah.
But it's admittedly way harder than any PPTQ that you've ever played in, and it's probably harder than any PTQ from like back in the day that you may have played in. Like, these are very difficult events, so you have to, like you said, you have to 6-0 your pod or whatever, right? Because is that how they did it? They split into pods?
No, there were no pods. It was 492 players split, and you just played Swiss, no pods, no nothing.
Oh, so it's just straight top eight of them?
Straight top eight.
And then, what is it, like a draft after that?
Nope, you keep playing with the decks.
You just keep playing with your modern deck?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, that's so difficult.
Well, there were two of them that were going off, because there was that, and then there was the PTQ for the sealed event.
For the sealed, right.
And then I think for the sealed event, that one was you play with your sealed deck, and then after that, if you went 6-0, you got entered into an 8-man draft.
Right,
after.
Top 8 draft, yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
I know that this, like, on one hand, I'm excited that they brought it back, because it's another way to qualify for the Pro Tour, which is great. I think the more ways that there are to do that, the better. But they don't make it easy, and it's not meant to be easy, right?
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, there's a lot of barriers to entry, like, and cost being one of them. I know that the entry alone for the GP, like GP prices have gotten way expensive over time. I know, how much was the entry for the modern GP?
For the main event, it was at minimum $70, and then for the PTQ, that was $50.
So already that weekend, you're paying $120 just for two events to play in. And you're not even like guaranteed to do well. You're not guaranteed to qualify. So you're just dropping $120 just at the chance to qualify.
Yeah.
Now, you're going for the experience. You're going to have that chance, but it's still a lot of money, you know. And I hate to be that nostalgic guy, but I remember back in the day when GPs, you know, were 25, 30, $40, and when they were getting to like $40-$50, like a lot of people were complaining then, and now it's just like, that's just how it is, and we just got to suck it up and do it.
I honestly think that comes down to Magic liquidating most GPs, because they're technically two kinds of GPs still, and I'll get to that distinction here in a second, but I think that just comes down to Channel Fireball literally running all the GPs right now. And the only other GP that we have, and I'm putting that in quotation marks, is with Star City. And granted, they run their own tournaments, they run their own system, they have their own version of pro players. But they're also rather expensive. I think they're on par with Channel Fireball, if not just like a little bit less pricey. I think they're like $65 a tournament. But with them, you don't get the mat if you pay max payout or whatever it is for the tournament. So with this GP, check this out. So I paid $70. For $70, I get my seat, I get my promo, I get my box. I do not get a mat for $70. And granted, most players don't want the mats at this point, who've been playing as long as you and I. But it's still that something less I get for $70. Especially considering the main event was run as poorly as it was.
Right. Well, I mean, and then because of what happened during the main event, it's got to be a huge money sink for Channel Fireball. Because if they refunded a bunch of players and then they offered to give everybody free entries into a future GP, like, that's just a bunch of money that Channel Fireball loses, all to retain that good faith, that goodwill with the community. Because you know that if they didn't do something, they would just lose whatever contract they have with Wizards, and then they would just open it up to another event organizer.
Yeah. Somebody was telling me that Wizards actually offered Star City the main deal first, and I'm not sure how true that is. I don't know if you've heard anything about that, but they supposedly offered Star City the main contract, and Star City turned them down to run their own thing, so that's why Channel Fireball's doing it.
Well, I don't know if that's true or not, but to be fair, Star City is super successful with what they're doing right now. I think that they have their own stuff on lock already, and they kind of pioneered what Magic coverage was for Wizards to kind of mimic and try and emulate. And even to this day, there are times when you have Wizards coverage on and it's just not as good as watching Cedric Phillips on coverage or watching on Star City. And oftentimes you'll see Star City coverage have more views than any GP coverage on Twitch.
Yeah. I mean, as far as I know, I'm sure Star City has their own problems with their own events, but over the last 2 years, I can recall off the top of my head, twice Channel Fireball has had a major issue like this. The first one that comes to mind, I believe, was in Georgia last year. Something very similar happened to this, where the rounds were delayed to 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Wow.
And now you have this instance with Vegas having the rounds just straight up delayed till 2:30. I don't know what system they're using, but it seems to me maybe Channel Fireball may need to reach out to Star City and see if maybe, hey, they could send someone down there to either help fix their software or maybe even purchase the software that they run their tournaments off of. I don't know if they run the same software. Who knows? Maybe they have their own.
No, yeah, I think it is. I think it's the Wizards Event Reporter, which admittedly, as a former level one judge running various events, is a terrible software. It's really, really bad. They haven't updated that software since, I don't know, 95 maybe? Maybe 2000? Who knows? But that software was, just god-awful garbage.
So maybe Channel Fireball does need to reach out to Star City then, see if they can maybe purchase the rights to use their software for the tournaments. Who knows? Two tournaments with this specifically happening in the span of a year, to me, is just a bit much.
Well, not only that, but, I know that in several GPs, there tend to be these logistical issues. I remember for San Antonio, we ran into something similar, although the delays were not that bad. But it just seems to be an issue that Wizards is having. They just can't get on board with anything that has to do with software. Event Reporter sucks. Magic Online is, it's admittedly still the best way for me to get playtesting in, but it's still buggy as all heck. And it's not the greatest. MTG Arena, I haven't played it, but I've seen plenty of it. Yeah. And I'm not really liking it.
They were offering betas at GP Vegas. Actually, they were giving out free beta codes, or what's left of them. I probably should have grabbed one. I thought you were in it, so that's my bad. I should have texted you just to double check to see maybe, hey, get you a free beta code, get you in there.
That's okay. I got a decent sized collection on Magic Online.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to continue rolling with that.
Yeah. For me, the main reason why I'm not doing Arena, other than the fact I don't have a beta code, is Arena focuses on Standard, and I'm more of a modern player. I'm more of an EDH and Legacy player. I do Standard on occasion. In my area, Standard really hasn't fired off in the longest time. They more or less focus on Modern. They focus on Draft, which I'm not a huge fan of Draft. They focus on Sealed, and that's my bread and butter when it comes to formats such like Draft and Sealed. But since they're not focusing on Standard as much, I don't consistently have a Standard deck.
Right. I mean, me neither.
Yeah.
I have this RPTQ coming up, and I solely, fully intended on renting the deck from Mana Traders. Mm-hmm. So, get this. I've been testing on Magic Online using the Mana Trader service. Yeah. And if you haven't heard about this, Mana Traders is a company that rents out cards both on Magic Online and physical paper cards. So for a monthly subscription, you have access to, and it's very difficult to explain. Like, I would just recommend going to their website to kind of review it. But you have access to, you know, such and such dollar amount, and you can just play test with it and keep it for as long as you need to. And you have so many hours that you can use on Magic Online. And then you also have the ability to rent physical cards from their website. So as I was preparing and settling on the deck that I wanted to rent, I get ready to go onto their website to rent the paper cards. Well, Mana Traders' paper rentals were down. So I reached out to them and I said, what's going on? They said that they were changing the distributors for which they get their paper supply, like their paper card supply from, to somebody else. So it was going to take them a month to convert that system. Mm. So that meant that there were no paper rentals for an entire month, which means that for this second round of RPTQs, these team RPTQs coming up, no paper rentals through Mana Traders. I used to go through a company called Spare Deck, but they went under. So, and I loved using their service. Their service was great, but they went under. I guess the business model just didn't suit them, and I don't know what happened. But so I had no access to getting a deck for the RPTQ, and I knew the 75 that I wanted to play, and I was just like blown away at how awesome my local community is, because my group of friends was able to come through for me, and between four people I was able to put together the 75 that I needed plus the 75 that one of our other players needed from just, you know, whatever my friends had. So I mean, I lucked out, because if I wasn't able to get that, I'd either be stuck buying a whole deck on eBay or, you know, Channel Fireball, Star City, what have you, and I would have been out whatever the cost of that deck was. I think it's like $400 or $500 just for my deck, and then for the other deck was like $300. So that's a lot of money. So that's, I mean, that's insane in and of itself.
I would wholly agree. I mean, I'm glad that at least you found out ahead of time rather than like trying to rent it last minute. I mean, worst comes to worst, luckily I'm in town. I know the deck you're playing. I don't know, ironically enough, I probably have the most expensive portions of that deck for you.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's probably $200 down, and we just need to scramble to find the other $400.
Well, I did have to buy some of the cards. So, when does this go up?
This will go up as soon as I'm done editing. So, I mean, in theory, I could probably have it up by Thursday.
By Thursday. So, the RPTQ will probably still be coming up, and I will not play it on it. But that's okay. I don't mind sharing what I'm on. I'm on Esper Control.
Yeah.
So, having to find all the cards for Esper Control wasn't easy, because it has expensive cards like Teferi's and Gear Hulks and Search for Escantas and all the lands and stuff like that. Now, you know, any of those pieces individually are not that expensive, but for someone who does not have any of that, you know, that's a $500 investment, like up front, that I would have had to come up with. So, I mean, I did have to buy some pieces that people didn't have, but that's okay, because I can just resell that stuff.
Yeah.
But I'm really looking forward to the event. Like, the RPTQ seems like it's going to be really, really fun.
Yeah, I remember the RPTQ that you, I, and a friend of ours, Junior, who may or may not still be in the building, we all went to the Team Modern event, I think San Antonio, about a year ago when you first introduced me to Wedge and the Professor.
Yeah, that was GP San Antonio was it last year?
I want to say it was.
It was last year. Yeah. That was the last, like, major event that I went to.
Yep. That sounds about right. And, I mean, we had a good time. Granted, we didn't place, my deck didn't show up. There were times where your deck didn't show up, and then Junior was a god with Tron, like he usually is, just slamming down Tron consistently, turn three, dropping Karn, and trying to carry the team as best he could. But if one of our decks, like, acted up, the other deck would act up.
Oh. Yeah, that's true. Man, that was, like, probably one of your worst showings in a long time.
Yeah. I mean, I really like Affinity. I've done well with Affinity in the past, but there were times where the deck just would not show up. And sometimes that's variance for you. And I feel like going back to this past weekend with the Modern PTQ in Vegas, that's just what it was. I was 5-0 for the longest time. Then the last time, my deck did not show up for two out of the three rounds. Round two, I got it. The first round, I literally only had one land after mulling to five. And the second round, I got it, like I said, and then the third round with it, I mulled six again, and it was a really good hand. It had two Hierarchs, it had a, I was going up against Affinity, so it had two Nature's Claims, it had the Inkmoth Nexus, and it had, I think, a Blighted Agent in hand. So it didn't have any pumps, but it had enough to stabilize, if I drew a land.
Yeah, you can't. That hand's no good without green swords.
Yeah, that was my own fault. I got greedy and I got like pushed towards it. So I mean, I wasn't too upset by losing, but obviously that's a hand I should have mulliganed. At that same token, it was, I think I lost in like by turn 4 to Affinity or something like that. I flipped over the next 7 or 8 cards out of the deck. There were no lands at all.
Yeah, I hate that.
You never do that. I hate when that happens. You never do that, but I looked just out of curiosity where the next land was and it wasn't coming up.
I even do that on Magic Online. Like when I just like hit that moment where like you're just missing like your 6th land for your Gearhulk, or you just need like the next land to play the spell that would have turned the game for you, and then you end up losing. You can hit the draw card button, and then you just rage hit it like a bunch of times, and you just see that there's no lands coming for like 7 turns.
Yep.
I hate that.
Yeah, that's... I'm not a huge fan of MPG Online. I mean, I do like Modern on there on occasion. I'll do Standard on there on occasion, but ultimately that's just how Variance works. I think it happens more often not on MTG Online than it happens in real life, but when it does happen in real life, I think the memory just sticks with you
a bit more. Yeah, I think honestly that's what makes the game as challenging as it is, and because you just never know what's going to happen. Like, it's not like chess, for example, where you can like figure it out and like get really good at it and it just never changes. It's, you know, Magic's just ever evolving, ever changing, and then the added aspect of Variance just makes it that much more interesting and impactful.
I would agree. There are some exceptions, of course, like when Standard gets stale because X, Y, and Z is happening. Like, I think the last one was Eldrazi Winter. I think that's the time about where you kind of tuned out for a couple of years. After Eldrazi Winter happened in Standard and after it happened in Modern, things kind of shifted around and things kind of changed. Well, now we're kind of into, as I'm going to call it, like a red invasion at this point.
Yeah, it's interesting. So I stopped playing shortly after GP San Antonio. Still played a little bit here and there. And then in this PPTQ, like there was a back-to-back PPTQ here locally where I was on Mardu Vehicles, and it was around the time where Marvel was still legal. Like Marvel with Ulamogs and stuff, that was still legal. So I run the wrong deck at that PPTQ on both days and just get eaten alive by Marvel. And I hated it. Marvel got banned, and then like they just did a string of bannings for a while. They banned Marvel. They banned Marvel.
They banned Marvel. So, and if I remember the ban order correctly, because I think I've talked about this on here before, but if I remember right, it was Smuggler's Copter, Reflector Mage, and Felidar Garden didn't come. It was those two plus Emrakul.
Right, and then they banned Felidar.
Mm-hmm. And then it was shortly after that, Marvel and something else. I can't remember.
Was it Emrakul?
No, I don't think it was. Because Emrakul was getting hit off Marvel during that time.
Hmm.
And then Emrakul got replaced by Ulamog, which, to be fair, I was playing Marvel before, and that's what I used. I used, I think it was almost like a 4 of Ulamog and a 1 of Emrakul. Like, Emrakul to me wasn't the main win condition. Ulamog was just that much better than Emrakul to me.
Yeah. And then even more recently, within the last year, I did another PPTQ locally where I was running Teemer Energy, and I really loved the deck. It was, actually, it was 4-color energy. It was, mm-hmm. It was more Sultai than Teemer. But I loved it, and I thought it had so much synergy, and it was great for the meta. I top-aided that event fairly easily. And then the very next Monday, it gets hit with a ban, and I had just invested in the deck, and I was like, you know what, forget this. And I just like decided I'm not gonna invest in Standard, because R&D, it seems like they're not doing their job and like keeping it together to where they can have a solid, diverse metagame without having to initiate any bans on any cards. And now we're seeing, like you said, this mono red invasion where you have mono red winning all these major events. It won the Pro Tour. It won the GP in Birmingham just a couple of weeks ago. And it's everybody's just complaining about how good Goblin Chain Whirler is. And that card is admittedly good, but it's not great. The issue is that there's not a lot of great ways to deal with it right now.
The issue to me is just the other 4 triple color creatures that came in that cycle are just so underpowered compared to Goblin Chain Whirler. You have the triple blue Djinn, which, yeah, granted it can gain X power, where X is the number of blue on the field, number of islands, but there's no blue deck to support that. The Steel Leaf Champion's the only other really good one out of that cycle, and that's only because Mono Green Stompy's kind of a thing.
Yeah, I mean, so, and I've been testing a lot of Standard online recently, so all of them, all of them are seeing play in some capacity, but the blue one is definitely not seeing as much play as any of the others. Steel Leaf Champion is a staple in the Mono Green decks. And it's pretty good in there. It's not great. Like, it's not, whenever I see a Steel Leaf, I'm not like quivering in my boots. Like, it's just another big creature I got to deal with. The Phyrexian, like, Nantuku Husk guy, the
Dread Shade.
Yeah. The Shade. I said Nantuku Husk. I meant Nantuku Shade. But, that guy, I mean, he's in the Mono Black deck and he's all right. But that Mono Black deck is like a watered down version of old school Mono Black from like Invasion Block.
Yeah. I think if they wanted to make that card good, he needed like an additional push. The fact that he only has like a pump, where a pump is number of swamps on the field, is okay, but I think maybe they should have given him a little push, like either Death Touch or Menace or something like that, just to put him on par with maybe Chain Whirl or something.
Yeah, I mean, the real threat in that deck is like Josu Vess, because they're able to pump out mana so quickly that they can kick Josu Vess pretty easily.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen it kicked on like turn 6, turn 5. And so you're dealing with a whole army of threats.
Yeah.
Like just Menace Zombies. You can't win. No. That's very tough to win.
It's like Menace Pirates with Vraska. It's very hard to win against that. And then I think the Manalish Marshal is arguably also not also seeing play.
Yeah, not really. Like, it's in the mono white decks, like the Gideon decks, the Gideon Knight decks. And a lot of them have moved over to like the black white version.
Yeah.
So it's cutting the Marshal for the Black Knight and like for some removal spells and things like that. But even then, that deck's not particularly great, so it's kind of a fringe deck.
See, so I'll let you in on a little something. So earlier, Eric and I and our friend Junior and Eric's wife Nitty were all at dinner, and we were just talking about Standard and what's going on with this RPTQ that he's going on, and I offered to play test him. So the deck I had mentioned earlier, I told you it was a bit different. And ironically enough, you hit the nail on the head right now. What I'm playing is Black-White Knights, effectively.
Yeah.
So, I've actually gotten... I think the deck's fairly good the way I have it. I think I have a fairly decent matchup against Control. Where I think I struggle, personally, is ironically enough against the Green deck. The Green deck just out-stomps me real quick.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't deal with Gulta outside of... a flash enchantment or something like that, like an Ixalan's Binding that just says no Galta. Galta is a 12-12 trampler. What am I supposed to do against that? My creatures don't do anything outside of Gideon maybe plussing and say he can't do damage this turn.
Right.
So I think the deck as a whole is fairly solid, especially the Black Knight, since he has Hexproof from White. That's Hexproof from all removal spells in Standard right now, except Fatal Push and some select red ones. I think having Hexproof against one-third of the field right now isn't too bad.
No, I think that's a great ability to have. But the fact that, like, Mono Red is just so good right now is just, like, it hinders the format a little bit in the sense that, like, I mean, get this. Dominaria was a very successful set, right? Mm-hmm. It's a very popular set, and it's awesome to draft, and it added a lot of great cards into the pool for Standard. And it even included a very strong Saproling sub theme. But when it comes to Standard, you can't play Saprolings because of Goblin Chain Whirler.
Yep.
Like you just cannot play the Saproling cards, because if they remove your Fungus Lord and you have a bunch of 1/1 Saprolings, Chain Whirler just like demolishes everything.
Yep. I mean, it almost forces you to play Double Lord with Metallic Mimic, since that's still in Standard. But here's the kicker, though. They just even nerfed tokens further with a spoiler that they released today. I can't recall the artifact's name. We'll talk about it once we get to that point. But the artifact effectively says all tokens get -1/-0.
Oh, right. I saw that. It was the one that says if you get targeted, it counters it. It's like it force spikes every use spell.
Yeah.
And then it also gives all the tokens -1/-0.
Yeah. And the funny thing about the card just says all creature tokens. It doesn't say your opponent controls. It's all creature tokens, period.
Right.
So there may be a use for this in Modern, may being the keyword.
Well, I don't know. I think that, like, for sure Modern, if this is the right one, I guess I should pull it up. But if it's the right artifact that we're talking about, it's the one that gives you Forespike, right?
Yeah.
Like you have to be, you Forespike all the spells. And let me see. I'm pulling it up right now. Yeah, it's called Amulet of Safekeeping. So it's a 2-mana artifact that says whenever you become the target of a spell or ability an opponent controls, counter that spell or ability unless its controller pays 1. And then it also reads, creature tokens get -1/-0.
Yep.
So it stops a lot of things in Modern. So Pyromancer is not as good. And then I think it shuts down Storm.
Yeah.
Aside from, because like Storm, if they try and win off the Goblin plan, all their goblins get -1/-0. So like, who cares? Like, you don't, good luck with that. Yeah. And then if they try and win off of the Grape Shot plan, well, they got to pay 1 for every single Grape Shot that they're throwing at your face, which they can't.
Yeah. Well, it's not, I'm not just thinking about the Storm matchup, but as a whole, because I'm thinking, because I used to run tokens in Modern, so I mean, the biggest token generator that most people know is Lingering Souls, and it shuts down that card just period. Now your Souls tokens really don't get value outside of blocking, which
right.
isn't that great. And then I think it shuts down the Liliana alt as well. Liliana, the new one from Innistrad, where she puts out two zombies into play tap. And I'm, by shutdown, I mean obviously depower the zombies, so you may have an extra turn or two to possibly win. Granted, it's still an alt, so I mean, at that point.
Yeah, so this card definitely has more application in Modern than it does in Standard. But I think that maybe they were thinking, well, you know, it's going to be good against, like, the Saplings. Like, they thought, maybe they thought Sapling was going to be, like, really great. Maybe they just didn't test with Goblin Chamber enough. Or maybe they thought, oh, it's going to be good against, like, History Benalia, which it's, like, it's okay against. But History Benalia is a really great card. I mean, and then they're also, like, for M-Link team, they're printing out a lot of good cards, too. And, I mean, I don't know how much time we have to go over spoilers, but I know that the big ones that everybody's excited about right now are Crucible Worlds, Scapeshift.
Yeah.
What else? What else are they reprinting?
I think those are the two major reprints. But before we actually hit the continuous spoilers, there's one last thing I want to kind of talk about touching on in Standard, and that is potential bans. From what I can recall, they're supposed to do a ban list every 2 weeks. I believe the Pro Tour was 2 weeks ago. There was no ban list, to my knowledge, announced today, which probably means that the cards are going to stay the same, but who knows, maybe they're late or something like that. But I think out of the current cards in Standard, if you go back a couple of months, it was in Red Deck, it was Ramunap Ruins, and it was the stupid Menace Raptor that said you couldn't gain life.
Oh, right.
And then it was, there was like another card. I can't exactly recall, but those cards all got hit. And so now, since that didn't affect Red clearly enough, is there a card in Red that you think has the potential to be banned in Standard?
Well, that's a good question. I honestly think that they're a little too ban crazy right now.
Yeah.
And I think that's partly on the fault, like I said earlier, that R&D isn't particularly testing the cards well enough.
Yeah.
So I think they preemptively ban cards sometimes, or they just bend to the will of the player. So like if they see enough people grieving about it on Reddit or on Twitter, they're going to end up, you know, bending to it and just making whatever bans happen. Right now, a lot of people are complaining about Goblin Chain Whirlers, so... Mm-hmm. If anything's going to get banned, it's probably going to be that. But honestly, like, I think the card's great, right?
Yeah.
And it's definitely very strong in this format.
Yeah.
I don't know that it needs to necessarily be banned, but it also doesn't need to be... Like, they just need to print, like, a good, solid removal spell. Like, if they bring back Doomblade, that'd be great. And things would be a lot better. And I think that it could be dealt with. But, like, going back to the history of, like, bannings, like, most recently, too... We left off a couple of cards off this list, like Attune with Aether and Rogue Refiner. Like, one of the reasons why I just dropped Magic most recently was because both of those cards were in that deck, and those got banned also. So currently there's, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 cards banned in Standard. That's got to be, I mean, I don't know that it's the most that's ever been banned at once, but it's definitely up there.
If we skip Mirrodin Block completely, because honestly, I think that probably had the most
bans. Well, yeah, because of all the lands.
Oh, not just the lands, but I want to say most Affinity was just outright banned at that point. The most bans I ever seen in Standard up until this year was probably back when Zendikar first happened. When I first moved to El Paso, I don't know if you remember, I was playing arguably the best red deck at the time up until probably this season of red. Mm-hmm. I was playing mono red goblins using burn. And just getting there. And I would consistently top 8 with that. But the two cards that saw ban out of that particular set, ironically enough, they waited till like 2 weeks before rotation to ban them, were Jace the Mind Sculptor and Stoneforge Mystic, when it didn't really even matter. 2 more weeks and they would have been gone.
Right. And that was, I think that was probably the first case in like modern Magic history where Wizards kind of bent to the will of the player, because I remember going to GP Dallas that year, that season, and it was just Cobblade mirrors left and right.
Yeah.
It was either straight blue-white Cobblade or blue-white-black Cobblade or blue-white-red Cobblade. Like, there were so many Cobblade variants, but you had to have been running one of the swords at least, plus Stoneforge Mystic, plus Squadron Hawk, plus Jace, and then your fetch lands.
Oh, don't forget Batterskull.
Batterskull, of course.
Yeah.
And so you just had to be running all those cards for sure. And that top eight, what happened was all eight decks had four copies of Jace in it. And it was four copies of Cobblade decks, and then four copies of like the Teemer Landfall deck.
Yeah.
With like Lotus Cobra and Titans. Like, I think it was, I forgot what the name of the deck was, but there's like
Titanfall. Titanfall. That's the deck I was on, actually. I think that was at the time that was the closest I ever came to like day twoing. That was still when I was like really green, I would say. And I didn't know my outs and stuff like that as well as I do today. And that's the deck I was on. I was on Titan Shift or Titanfall. And I remember us play testing quite a bit. And it just seemed overall, like, to me, unless I got donuts, that you had the better deck. Because I believe Path of Exile was in Standard at that time, too.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of great cards in Standard at that time. Like, aside from the fetch lines, we also had, like, Lightning Bolt. Doomblade was in there. Preordain was like the premier draw spell.
Yeah.
And I honestly think that card should have been banned. That card was amazing.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like that's when Standard was still, like, it was really, really, there's only two decks in the format. And so you just had to get really good with one of the two decks in the format or go rogue and just try and win off of that. But yep. To little to no success.
Yep.
And that's like, honestly, that's when I like Standard, because I like formats that are figured out. And you just have to, like, keep grinding until you get good with a deck. I prefer it that way. When there's a lot of variance in the format, that's when I struggle a little bit more, because you have to test all these matchups, find out what's good, and there's a lot more innovation.
Yeah.
But I'll admit, though, it's healthier for the game. And I would rather have that for the greater good of the game than to just have two decks in a format, everybody complain about it. For me, being, like, the grinder, the you know, I just want to have it solved, and I want to be able to get to the next level.
Yep.
But that's just not, it's not a fun way to play Magic.
Yeah. I mean, going back to what I think we initially were talking about, like bans, I mean, currently, I think red deck, if you include the red-black variant, is roughly about 60% of the meta, and that's just for aggro. And that's not including, obviously, the green-black variants, the mono-green stompy variants, the white-black variants, and what else am I forgetting? The mono-blue, Esper Control, and the Azorius Control decks. Mm-hmm. I want to say those are roughly the eight decks that are in Standard right now.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, there's all sorts of other types of decks as well that are, you know, like the Knights deck that we were talking about, and like, you know, all sorts of other different types of decks that are just kind of like rogue or fringe decks that you see once in a while. But the fact that there's so much variation between the decks, like you have these archetypes, like you have control, but that can be just like straight blue-white control. And is it Teferi control, where you're not playing any win conditions except Teferi? Or is it the version that you're playing with Gear Hulks to help edge it over? Or is it the version that you're playing Second Sunrise in? Yeah. Or Approach of the Second Sun? Those are all like different types, just within the control archetype. And then like other decks, like green, you know, you have just straight mono green. You have green splashing black. You have green splashing blue. Then you have black-green constrictor. Like, you have all these different types of green decks. And like you said, red-black, like, there's all sorts of variation between these archetypes that make it a little bit more healthy, but to what end? I mean, red is still the dominating force in the format.
I just think that's probably because red right now has the best variants out of Standard. Once Amonkhet rotates, obviously, red's going to lose a majority, if not all, their good cards. I think what's left is like Lightning Strike and Chain Whirler after rotation, because almost everything else is out of Amonkhet.
So when does Amonkhet rotate? Is it
like October?
It's in the fall. So with October. The new set, what's the new set? Alara Block or
New set? We're going back to Ravnica.
In the fall? In this fall? Oh, yeah. I thought that was like next year.
Nope. It's this year. It's three seasons of Ravnica.
I thought we were going back to Alara.
No, I wish.
Oh, we're going back to Ravnica.
We're going back to Ravnica.
That's what I thought. Okay.
We're going back to Ravnica for three sets. A lot of people are looking forward to it. The Shocklands are already spiking up in price just a smidge. There's also a rumor going around that they might not even reprint the Shocklands, which I think would be probably a bad idea.
I think that they will, because we have the Czechlands right now.
Yeah.
And the Czechlands and the Shocklands play really well together.
Yeah.
I do like the Cycle Lands a lot, too. Yeah. Although I don't think that we're going to see... Maybe we'll see the Shocklands, maybe we won't. But I think that they will. Like, they kind of have to at this point, right? Like, you associate the Shocklands with the Ravnica block, so you can probably expect them to be there.
You could probably expect them, but I can't imagine the outcry if Shocklands weren't in Ravnica. Granted, it would change things up a little bit, but it would be messing with Richard Garfield's perfect idea for a set, I think. Because he was the one who originally designed Ravnica, if I remember correctly. When they brought him back out of retirement, that was the first set that he designed. Because we just came off of, correct me if I'm wrong, Mirrodin block, roughly.
I mean, there was like Kamigawa block like in between that somewhere.
Yeah.
And then Cold Snap and...
A bunch of crap sets. Well, not crap sets, but a bunch of bad sets that left bad taste in people's mouths. Because yeah, there was one dominant deck... Or there were a bunch of cards that were useless.
Definitely. Original Ravnica block was one of the best blocks to play. And it definitely revitalized the game for a lot of players. So I agree. And I think that the nostalgia factor is there to have another return to Ravnica. So, I mean, I'm all for it. Like, even though I don't play much as I'd like to anymore, I still follow along with coverage very often. I play online quite a bit. And, you know, so even though I'm not, like, physically out there, I'm still there.
Yeah.
And I would certainly enjoy a return to Ravnica. But I think that they've done great with a lot of the sets lately. Like, I do think that Kaladesh block was a bit overpowered. Like, energy, I think they had the right intention with the energy theme, but it just proved to be super powerful. There are a lot of powerful cards that came out of that block.
Mm-hmm.
Ixalan, I mean, I kind of played a little bit of Ixalan, but not really all that much. But I know that, like, it's got a lot of good cards in there, so...
Ixalan, to me, was flavorful. I love pirates. I love dinosaurs. Heck, I got some tokens I'm going to show you later. It's literally a pirate riding a dinosaur holding a keg. It's awesome. I picked that up at GP Vegas. Pretty cool. But outside of that, I can't really say to me that Ixalan had... as a block, had a lot of good cards for Eternal Formats. Yes, we have Search for Ezcanta, and yes, we have Carnage Tyrant, which is seeing slight play in Modern, but outside of those two cards, I can't recall
being
super impactful.
I think all the flip land ones are going to see some play in Eternal Formats at some point. They're going to be, I mean, for sure Search, right? That's in like all the formats right now. But even the other ones, like, if I were a betting man, I would bet that, you know, a few years down the road, we're going to see Argyle's Bloodfast, we're going to see whatever the green one is that turns into a Gaea's Cradle. Like, we're going to see all those.
I think that one's, like, Growing Rites of Iklamok or something like
that. Yeah, I don't even know the names. That's how much, like, that's how little Ixalan I played.
You see, to me, that one, like, it made it as a one-of in the Elves deck. It's Gaea's Cradle on the back. I don't see why Elves doesn't play that as a one-of. But Elves really hasn't made a Modern impact just yet. It hasn't made a resurgence, as it probably should have.
Right.
Overall, I think, if anything, maybe getting banned... in Standard, it might be Phoenix, because Phoenix, as we discussed earlier, shares more common between the red-black deck and the mono-red deck, but who knows? That's just overall what I think of that.
Yeah, I think they're probably just going to wait to see what M19 does, because we have the pre-release already coming up in a couple of weeks, and then it'll be Standard legal either that weekend or the following weekend, so I think that they're going to wait to see what gets shaken up with M19. The set is looking pretty good, so I mean, I wouldn't blame them if they wanted to wait, because I think that there's already, you know, players don't want to play because, or don't want to invest because they don't want their cards to get banned.
Yeah.
I know that was a big discussion here locally with, and even for me, like, I invested in this teamer deck and then got, like, the deck got banned out, and people who had Marvel, the deck got banned out.
Yeah.
And so it just happened way too much to all these people that they're just afraid to own cards.
It happened twice to me. I'll admit it. I was on Saheeli. It got banned. I was like, all right, sure, let's go over to Marvel. And I was playing Marvel, and Emrakul got banned. So I was already doing Ulamogs, and that didn't necessarily hurt me as much. But then Marvel itself got banned, and now that left a bad taste in my mouth for Standard. And that's kind of why I have the taste I do for Standard currently. And I think in my area, Standard even hasn't recovered. There's no place to really play Standard around there outside of Draft. And I'm not a huge fan of Draft, personally. I know a lot of people like it. It's just not my forte.
Right. And that's fair. Like, Magic should be enjoyed by the people who enjoy it the most. And that's everybody. Like, there's a format for everybody.
Yeah.
Like, if you like Commander, if you like Legacy, if you like Modern, the new format, Battle Bond, I haven't played yet, but it looks cool. Like, everything just looks great. It looks like they have a lot of different offers for a lot of different people. And it's not just about the competitive formats either. Like, for me, that's my jive, right? So, yeah. Whatever's going to get me to the Pro Tour, whether it's Standard, Modern, Legacy, Draft, Sealed, like, I don't care.
Yeah.
I'm just going to learn how to play it all and try and be the best at it as I can. But that's only a small part of the larger audience that Magic has. So, I mean, I'm all for whatever. If you're playing Magic, I love it.
Yeah, I would agree. So, I guess, moving on to our, like, last topics. Were there any cards that caught your eye in M19? Since this is the first time Core's been back for, what, like, 3 years now?
Yeah, it's been a while since we saw a Core set. There are some cards that I think are going to make waves in Standard. But first, we were talking about reprints. We forgot Omniscience.
Oh, yeah.
Omniscience was just announced today, so that's going to be a good one. I think in Standard, like, we get this 5-mana Wrath where you get to choose the mode to destroy all creatures or destroy all artifacts and enchantments. So that's kind of good. It's another option to Fumigate. And with a lot of white enchantment hate running around, it's not bad.
So one of the cards I mentioned earlier, it's in Spanish. I can't speak Spanish that well, but the English translation is Contrite Cleric. It is a 1-colorless, 1-white cleric spirit with flying. That's 2/1. So you sacrifice Contrite Cleric, exile all cards from target player's graveyard. So that's more utility, I think. That's another way for players to get around graveyard hate. And if, for whatever reason, like Rest in Peace becomes too popular, or God forbid sees a ban for whatever reason, I think Toolbox players have this to fall back on, which isn't too bad. I think that definitely has Standard play for sure, since Gearhulk's a thing and Scarab God's still a thing for a while.
Yeah.
But Modern possibilities, I think, for that particular card, since it's a Tomod's Crypt on a stick, are quite decent. And I think Spirits is also kind of making a little headway in Modern too, so I can see them utilizing that card.
One of the things that they're doing with the set is they're revitalizing the Elder Dragons from Legends.
Yeah.
So Nicol Bolas got a new card where he's a dragon on the front and flips into a Planeswalker, and he's just badass all around. So everybody knows that he's going to be great. They redid Chromium, and there's two other ones here also, Palladia Moors and Vivictus Asmadi.
Luck with that name.
Your guess is as good as mine on how to pronounce that, but I mean, they look all right. I think that that's more for like the EDH players. I don't know if they're going to make any waves in Standard. I could see that they will. Like, the for sure Chromium is going to be great in the Esper decks as a finisher, because he basically has pseudo hexproof. And it can't be countered, and it's got flash, and it's got flying. So it's kind of like all these great things going for it, and then can shrink itself into a 1/1 that basically can't die to removal.
Yeah, it requires a sack effect effectively, which isn't too bad. So is that, it's okay, it's this turn. So does it flip back, or no?
Yeah, the next turn.
Like, okay.
It's until end of turn, so.
Because there's one of these cards, I think it's Palady More the Ruiner. So it's Flying Vigilance, Trample, 6-drop for effectively 6 cost. So it has Hexproof until it has dealt damage, and the key word there is yet. So a lot of people are kind of confused with this card. Since it has pseudo-Hexproof as well, do they mean yet as in this turn, and then as soon as the turn is over, it goes back to being Hexproof, or do they mean for the game? As a level 1 judge formally, how would you interpret this card's ruling? Because I think a lot of people are actually interested in this one.
Wow, I hadn't thought about that. I mean, as I read it, without you telling me what people thought of it, I just automatically assumed for the turn. Mm-hmm. So it has Hexproof for the turn until it's dealt damage.
Yeah.
So, or until it has dealt damage. But now that you explain it to me, like, I can see that, you know, for the rest of the game, or what is it? I'm sure that with the release notes for the pre-release, you'll get the rules, like the Oracle rulings for it to go along with it. I'm fairly certain, though, that it's just for the turn.
If it is for the turn, why wouldn't R&D... I guess maybe this is just an R&D oversight, in my opinion. Why I don't understand why they just wouldn't put until the turn. But if it is, effectively, as soon as it deals damage, it's no longer Hexproof. I think that's kind of strange for a card just to even have that.
Well, and that's true, because like I hadn't really looked at it. If it is just for the turn, then the card's pretty good. Like, it's borderline busted. In fact, it's busted. Flying Trample Haste, Hexproof until it deals damage for the turn.
That thing has haste?
No, it doesn't. Vigilance. Okay, so Flying Vigilance Trample, still very good. 6-6 for 6. Now, if it is just until the very first time it deals damage, it's not quite as good, but it's still playable. And I think that, that we'll definitely see it make some waves in Standard. There's a lot of other really good cards, too, that I think could see play.
I think a lot of people are interested in the Planeswalkers right now. Obviously, they're a huge seller to the set. And to me, one that a lot of people are overlooking right now is Vivian Reed. She's the new green Planeswalker in the lore. Nyssa went back to Zendikar, if you keep up with that sort of thing.
Wait, she went back to Zendikar?
She quit the Gatewatch, and she went back to Zendikar because she wanted to take care of her home plane, effectively.
So, I didn't know that.
Yeah, she forsook her oath, and obviously, like, Lilianus forsook her oath, and a bunch of other crap happened.
I mean, I'm super interested in the lore, but I just don't follow it well enough to know what's going on. I just know that the Gatewatch got their asses kicked on Amonkhet when they went to go fight Nicol Bolas.
Mm-hmm.
And then whatever happened after that, like during Ixalan, I just don't know.
So as a quick catch up, obviously after Ixalan, like Vraska and Jace had like this little pseudo interspecies romance, and they screwed with a Sphinx's mind and then got off Ixalan after Tezzeret like stole a major artifact. Jace locked away her memories of him, and Nicol Bolas somehow wasn't able to see that. Don't know. So, obviously, Nicol Bolas, I guess, was just, like, careless, or maybe it was, like, one of his clones or something. I'm not 100% sure.
Nicol Bolas has clones?
Nicol Bolas has been killed once before, and Nicol Bolas has clones that he just, at will, makes. I think Tezzeret killed one of his clones, and then Nicol Bolas says, ha-ha, that was my clone. That's their way of keeping Nicol Bolas around. You never know if it's actually him or not.
Wow.
So, in... After Ixalan happens, they all go to, like, Dominaria, and everyone's meeting up, and, like, the goal of Dominaria is effectively getting Teferi's mojo back and Liliana killing the last of her demons. Liliana kills the last of her demons, and she thinks she's free. Nicol Bolas says, I still own your soul, so Liliana betrays the Gatewatch because Nicol Bolas owns her soul. Nyssa, pretty much at the very beginning, quits the Gatewatch and goes back to Zendikar. She forsakes her oath. Chandra is just... Chandra burning crap up. Gideon tries to still be like Superman and still save everyone, and Jace is just like, don't trust people. Jace is Jace.
Is Jace still part of the Gatewatch?
Jace is still part of the Gatewatch. The only two who are not part of the Gatewatch right now are Nyssa and Liliana.
Yeah, technically. So I guess that's why we have a new Green Planeswalker.
Yes.
So she's brand new. And I saw in the article today that Wizards put out, like, they're only giving her a little bit of a backstory and intend to maybe go further into detail on it later on. But they said that they're doing it because they want to give a variety to the five Planeswalkers that they're going to put in these core sets. Like, they're going to keep pumping out core sets, they say. And, of course, they're going to be putting five Planeswalkers, one for each color.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't want to always have the same ones.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's kind of cool. So, like, we see Ajani coming back, and we see Vivian Reed come, like, as a new green Planeswalker. There's a lot of cards referring to Sarkinval, so I can expect to see him as the red Planeswalker.
He is currently in the Planeswalker dual starter sets. Those little things that they're doing, him and Liliana are both in there along with Tezzeret. So I think it's safe to assume that the five Planeswalkers outside of Nicol Bolas are going to be obviously Ajani for white, Vivian Reed for green. You're going to probably see Liliana as her mono black thing. So that boosts Tezzeret to mono blue, mm-hmm. and that makes Sarkhan mono red.
Yeah.
Because we already have a multicolor Planeswalker, and Sarkhan and Tezzeret are naturally both multicolor now, but I think we're going to see them in monocolor.
Yeah, I think that's pretty safe to assume, and I think that's going to add like new variety of Planeswalkers.
I think people are going to be a little happy with that. A lot of people are actually giving Vivian Reed crap for how basic she is. She's a 5-drop, 5 loyalty Planeswalker, plus 1 look at the top 4 cards of a library, put a land or creature among them into your hand, and then put the rest of the bottom in a random order. -3, destroy target artifact, enchantment, or creature with flying. And then -8, you get an emblem where it says creatures you control have vigilance, trample, and are indestructible, and get +2/+2. So, obviously she's a very green Planeswalker. Her alt is just to win more, if possibly not just finish out the game with her alt. I actually kind of like her for the sheer fact that she deals with all the new dragons that we're getting. that possibly may see standard play.
Yeah, I mean, like, in the mono green decks right now, they're running Nissa, whatever she's called, Nissa Worldwaker, or whatever she's called. The one that makes 5/5, you just plus one and you can make a land of 5/5 until your next turn.
Yeah.
And that card is better than Vivian Reed, I think. So, I don't know. Maybe you put, like, one of Vivian Reed in the side. I just, like, I don't see it, but, I mean, she might get good later on. Yeah. Like, after rotation, I don't know.
I just like her for the fact that not only, I'm maybe oversimplifying it, she deals with dragons, obviously. She deals with the artifacts that we have in Standard currently, which are a lot of vehicles, yeah. Which I think is fairly decent. I can't recall any enchantments that are really seeing play outside of really Cast Out. And what's the other one with Flash? The 2-drop one.
Seal Away. Yeah, there's also like Ixalan's Binding. You're right. There's a lot of enchantments. There's a lot of artifacts. Creatures with flying. Like, there's angels. Like
Lyra Dawnbringer.
Lyra, the other one. Shalai. Yeah. Okay. She's getting a little better.
Yeah.
In my eyes, she's getting a little better.
Her neg is where it's at. Obviously, the plus one, you really don't care, and her alt is a win more condition. I want to say, personally, for me, her neg is where it's at, and I think she has sideboard potential. She's not like a $100 planeswalker by any means, but she's not worse than, say, Joyelle or whatever, the red walker from Dominaria. That card's like $5.
The Red Walker from Dominaria?
Exactly. You don't even know that there's a Red Walker from Dominaria.
No. There is?
Yes.
Oh, man.
She's strictly red.
Jaya.
Jaya
Ballard. Yeah.
She's terrible.
She's not very good.
I wish she was better, because she should be better, but I think R&D kind of overlooked her when they were designing Karn, and they were designing Teferi to be really good, and now they design Grandma, and Grandma can't do anything.
Yeah, I'm just waiting to see Elspeth come back. I mean, if Nicol Bolas can come back, if Karn can come back, if Ajani can come back, I think Elspeth can certainly come back.
So, supposedly in the lore, Nicol Bolas told Gideon he's going to die on Theros. That means eventually we're going to go back to Theros, and Gideon may or not die. And that's currently where Elspeth is at. So, I could see maybe Gideon, being the Superman he is, trying to find Elspeth somehow with Ajani's help, going down to Hell and trading places with Elspeth, and Elspeth going back up to, Earth and not Hell. Or maybe Gideon's powers, like, die on the world when he kills his gods or something. I know a lot of people like Gideon, I myself do, but there's also a lot of people who don't like Gideon.
Well, I think people are just tired of Gideon. Like, they're tired of Gideon as the White Planeswalker. So, it's time to switch it up, bring back Mama Elspeth. She's a badass. She needs to come back and start pumping out soldier tokens like we know she can.
Speaking of soldiers, have you read the Ajani's last ability? What do you think, Ajani?
Ajani's last ability? I have not, but luckily I have a piece of technology in my hands that I can look it up really quick. Okay, so you get an emblem with, at the beginning of your end step, create 3. So he's got the Elspeth ability.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as an emblem, like, he is a 4-drop planeswalker, and
See that? That pause, that hesitation, like, tells me enough, I think.
Like, it's not great as an emblem, but the fact that they're 1/1s and we have Goblin Chain Whirler in the format, like, that emblem's not going to do anything.
No.
It's not going to do anything at all, unless they print something that pumps tokens or something like that.
Well, his plus one may or may not affect the tokens, depending, but the problem is you also have Chain Whirler, you have the combination with Soul Scour Mage?
There's that new black card, too, that it's like the black Chain Whirler that they also previewed today, or yesterday. Did you see that one?
The black Chain Whirler? You mean, yeah. Death Baron?
No, isn't that the Skeleton Lord?
Yeah.
No. It's called Plague Mare. It's an uncommon. So it's one of the mares in the mare cycle for M19. It's one black for a 2/2 Nightmare Horse, and it says, Plague Mare can't be blocked by white creatures. When Plague Mare enters the battlefield, creatures your opponents control get -1/-1 until end of turn.
Jesus.
So, no saplings, no cat creatures from Ajani. Like, it's not going to be, like, so going back to Ajani, his ultimate's not great.
No.
So, that means that
you're relying on his plus one and his minus.
Right, and I don't think that those are very good either. Like, his plus one's fine, his minus, Return target creature card, converted mana cost two or less from your graveyard to the battlefield. Now that could see play, so you can get your knights back, you can get a couple of other things back. I don't know what's good that's two drop.
In the white deck that I think you'd play him in, I think you can get the Hexproof Knights. The white one and the black one are probably your best two drop targets in that deck.
Right.
I can't recall any other creatures. It's two drop cost or two drop power? Because if it's power, then that's a heck of a lot different. But if it's cost, then that limits your options. Because then you can't even get like cards like Mentor of the Meek, which is in this set.
Oh, yeah. No, it's two-drop cost. Mana cost.
Yeah, then I think Johnny may not even see that much play, unfortunately.
Maybe we'll see him in Death and Taxes.
Maybe.
He's probably the Death and Taxes Planeswalker. If they even want it. Like, Aetherbile can't pump him out, so like I don't think they care about him.
No. I mean, you have cards like... So you have an infinite combo in Nexus of Fate in itself, because if that's the last card in your deck, obviously you're taking infinite turns if you have that much mana. But now with Omniscience also coming into standard, now you don't even need to pay the mana for it. Now you can just take infinite turns, put that back in your deck, and just keep going.
Well, they had this, and they had another expensive Time Walk spell when they first printed Omniscience, and that didn't really happen. The problem is that Omniscience costs 8.
10
mana to put out and without a way to cheat it out, right?
There's no way in standard.
Right, in standard. There's no way to cheat it out in standard. So you can't cheat it out, so you have to hard cast it. By turn 10 in standard, if you're not dead to the Chain Whirler decks, you're probably close to dead by every other deck.
Yeah, this is true. I do. Maybe we'll see a way to cheat it out. I doubt it, but if there is, you know what deck I'm going to be playing. I'm just an Omniscience fan, and there are quite a few juicy targets for me to just cast. The one card that I do see a lot of buzz going on right now is Alpine Moon, so that is a one-drop enchantment. When it enters the battlefield, choose a non-basic land card name. Land your opponent's control with the chosen name, lose all land types and abilities that they gain, and instead they gain add one mana of any color to their mana pool, right? So I'm hearing talk of this already seeing possible play in Legacy and in Modern. And
it's got applications. Like, it hoses Ink Moth Nexus, it hoses lot of the utility lands, Urborg.
It hoses Tron.
Hoses Tron.
It hoses Field of Ruin in Standard, it hoses Cavern of Souls, it hoses Nykthos Shrine to Nyx. Any special land it's going to hose. And the place I see this thing play in, if anything, is possibly Affinity. So Affinity plays Blood Moon on occasion. And oftentimes, I use, as an Affinity player, yes, I'll play Blood Moon. But if I play Blood Moon, now I have no access to my man lands. And sometimes, I'll admit, that's killed me. Because now I can't do anything.
Right.
So this card, as a one of or two of sideboard instead of Blood Moon, I can now name cards against Tron. And yes, granted, Tron can still get their green and possibly Nature's Claim this. But that might be enough to stall me a turn. This unfortunately has no effect against, like, say, the Humans deck, because all their lands produce multicolor anyways, but you might be able to say Cavern of Souls and make their stuff counterable. Granted, they have Aethervile, so it doesn't really matter, but it's just a thought.
Yeah, but I didn't think about the Tron application. It has applications there, but, like, Tron's already gonna Nature's Claim your Blood Moon anyway, so this is just another target. I think it's fine. In Standard, it's probably gonna be better against, like, the greedier decks, like Esper, for example, that relies heavily on the tap lands and the other lands. Like, Field of Ruin is great. All the desert lands that have applications, like against the green deck, it's got that Hasheep Oasis or whatever it's called, that pumps up the creatures, or the Cabal Stronghold in Mono Black. Like, yep. It poses that. Like, that's fine, too. Yep. So, I mean, I think it'll see play somewhat in Standard, especially as a sideboard card for the red decks. It's fine, and I think it's fair. It's not, like...
It's not like Blood Moon.
It's not Blood Moon. It's not busted. Like, yeah. It's fair.
I had a discussion earlier today with some of my friends from Galveston, and they were like, oh, this card's going to make Blood Moon get banned. This card's going to make Blood Moon get banned because this and Blood Sun effectively do the same thing. I'm just like, they do completely different things. This card is good. This card might replace Blood Moon and a couple of sideboard cards, sideboard decks in Modern, but it's not the end-all be-all of things.
Yeah.
Now compare that to Crucible of World being in Standard. Crucible of World, now in Standard, with Field of Ruins, means Control has another lockout piece. Not only can you just disrupt your opponent's field with field ruin, but now you could also get your field ruin back and just keep the momentum going.
Right, until they just run out of basics and mm-hmm. like you just start going to town on them.
Yeah, it's a wasteland combo in Standard, which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
If you wanted to, you could even run stupid Aven Mind Sensor, make it so your opponents can only search the top four cards of their deck.
Oh, wow. I forgot that card was legal.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I bet you we'll see that. We'll probably see something like that.
For at least 3 months until Aven Mind Sensor rotates. Granted, Aven Mind Sensor dies to any form of removal, but if they can only search the top four cards of their deck, that's not too bad.
Yeah. That's not bad. I think you might be onto the makings of a fringe deck, like a pseudo prison deck or something. I could see something like that, like a red white, like with Alpine Moon and Crucible and Field of Ruin, and just like a bunch of like the enchantment hate and stuff like that. I don't know.
Well, there's a taxes list possibly brewing, because there's another card from Dominaria, Bayard, Steward of Argive or something like that. He's a 4-drop 2/4 with vigilance, and he effectively taxes your opponent whenever they attack. If they want to attack with a single creature, they have to pay one to attack. And then you also have this new artifact that says if they want to target you, they have to pay one to target you, plus all their tokens -1/-0.
Yeah. I can see like a standard annoying prison deck. Like I know that these decks pop up from time to time, whether it's like Turbo Fog or Prison or whatever. And like there are definitely players for that. I'm 100% not one. And I know that I hate playing against those decks, so
we can give it to Junior.
Yeah, there you go.
We'll give it to him, and he'll wreck shop. Watch.
He'll have to do it.
There's just so much potential. And granted, we've only seen half of the spoilers right now. I mean, there's still other things that we haven't even touched on, like the Elvish Lord or the 5-drop dumb dinosaur, 10 power, 10 toughness, which is ridiculous. Or Infernal Reckoning, which exiles a colorless creature. I mean, there's just so much potential with this core set that it's ridiculous. There's not even reprints in this set. I would almost put this core set, maybe I'm looking at it with Sparkle Eyes or whatever. What is it? What's the term? Blinded Eyes or something like that from Dominaria. But this set seems very powerful to me.
Yeah, it's pretty good for a core set. Like, it's not... It's more like... It reminds me more of Magic Origins than a core set, like a normal like M core set.
I mean, technically, this is a Magic Origins when you think about it, because now we're getting the revamped Dragon Elder Dragons, and we're getting their origin cards in theory.
It's true, we are. I mean, I do see some reprints in here too, like Shock, Electrify, Disperse, Divination. Like, there's some decent reprints in here that make for a good core set. But there's a lot of new cards too that I think could. For sure, like, I'm a big limited player, so I can see playing with a lot of these cards in limited and seeing how good they do, and so far, it looks like a pretty diverse and fun limited format, so I'm excited for that, at the very least. Like, I'll definitely be playing in my pre-release for this, and I'll be probably running some drafts online and just, you know, having fun with it.
So, I guess my final thought on this overall is the biggest reprint outside of Crucible World so far is Scapeshift. That card was $60, $70 per, and this is the first reprinting we've ever seen, period. Not only should have this probably happened a long time ago, but now that it's happening in a core set, do you see maybe any utility of it from your perspective? Is there any use in it in Standard?
No, it's just a reprint for reprint's sake. I think if there is utility for it in Standard, I can't see it. Maybe they're going to print Valakut somewhere, or I don't know. Like,
Do you really... think the red decks need the Valakut, though?
No, that's why. They don't need the Valakut, so I don't know. I couldn't tell you.
I think this was overall their apology for not printing Scapeshift when they needed to print it. Like, just a long time ago. We needed it in Modern Masters 2. It wasn't there. No Modern Masters 3. No Eternal Masters. No M25.
Yeah, no Iconic Masters.
Nothing.
Yeah.
And I know the card literally only sees play in Modern because it doesn't see play in Legacy. And in EDH, no one's desperate enough to really play Scapeshift, in my opinion. You can't get multiple Valakuts outside of having Thespian Stage and the other clone land. Mm-hmm. So you can't get multiple Valakut triggers. So it's a card strictly for Modern that's needed reprint for the longest time.
Yeah, I think that they should have just included it in maybe like Battle Bond or something. Like Battle Bond had infinite value already in there anyway. What's wrong with one more card?
Yeah, I mean, because green would have been too popular.
Like it just feels like they're just throwing away this rare slot just to have a reprint.
Well, it's
like,
not even rare. It got bumped up. It's a mythic.
Oh, you're right. Well, that too.
They're throwing away kind of like a mythic slot, I think, at this point. Because, yes, it's going to drop the price drastically of Scapeshift from $70 to, say, maybe $40. Because, again, Scapeshift is the only deck that uses this card.
Right.
And it needed more Scapeshifts.
I mean, the art on it is cool.
Oh, yeah. Like, it's a bunch of ships just settled right there on the land.
Yeah, unless there's, like, a desert deck that wants this. I don't know.
I would say if Ramunap Ruins was still in Standard, yes.
Sure, yeah.
But since it's banned, the only other card that's, like, a win condition is, like, Imbnu Riverlet, the mill land, mm-hmm. and maybe Hashep Oasis that gives a creature +3/+3.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe one of those two, but we'll leave that to the... to the people who create these busted decks. I'm just the guy that plays them.
I'm the guy who probably buys way too many cards. Way too many. But I guess we'll go ahead and close it here for now. Do you have any last thoughts, Eric?
No, I don't. Thank you for having me on. I had a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. I've had a lot of fun, too. It's been great having you on the podcast. It's always great having guests, but I've been wanting to get you for a long time. So,
oh, thanks, man. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that.
So do you have any place that you want people to maybe follow you at? Twitter, YouTube,
man, Twitch? I'm not really active on social media anymore, but yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Spellgrinder. So that's S-P-E-L-L Grinder. I don't know. That was just like my YouTube channel name, and I ended up changing my Twitter handle to that, so that's just what it is. I'm on Twitch somewhere. I think it's my name. I don't know. I've been debating about streaming after the RPTQ. I'm still on the fence about it, yeah. So I guess just the best place to find me is going to be on Twitter. I mostly tweet about Magic, and that's all I really use Twitter for, so that's going to be the best place for you to get me.
Understandable. And as before, you guys know where to find me. I'm at MTG Eternities on Twitter. You can also find me on YouTube under the same name, MTG Eternities. Remember to check the link below again for Wedge's Patreon. We just want to get that out there and make sure the guy gets better. He definitely had a major surgery, folks. So be sure, if you can, donate, even if it's just $1, to donate to the Patreon. With that being said, just remember, all lines of thought are open for all Magic seekers. This is your host from MTG Eternities, signing out.